This is Northland Angler, the Northland Tackle Podcast.
Well, today we get to talk to one of our favorite people, Chip Lear, who recently was inducted into the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame. The actual induction's actually coming up in March. And I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, Chip. What an honor that is for you.
It is truly humbling, Kevin. There's no doubt about that. You get this letter in the mail, and you're kind of in shock at first, and then it's followed up with some phone calls and emails and texts from all the all your fishing heroes, right? So I mean, everybody I grew up with and everybody I've aspired and tried to mimic my career after is suddenly calling you up, telling you, you know, great job. And I think the most surprising thing is just actually how many people were paying attention. I didn't know anybody even knew who I was.
Well, Chip, obviously they were. What are the criteria? What is it that gets a person into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I don't know all the ins and outs of the process. I do know from talking to from the director Emmett Brown that they're, you know, somebody puts in an application on your behalf, which I did not even know I was in the pile. And there's a committee of, I believe, about 12 people who review everybody in the hopper, and you're in that hopper for a couple of years, and then you get kicked out and must be resubmitted. But I did find out that I'd been in there, and I was on my second round. So it was two years inside that hopper, and I got voted in. So, and it, interestingly enough, of the committee, there's only, I think that I knew two of the 12 people on this committee, but it's a nationwide committee, a lot of saltwater guys and a lot of guys from all over the country that are analyzing who's doing what inside the fishing industry and who's making a difference. And that's one of the reasons it's really humbling, is to kind of have your work picked apart, so to speak. I'm not on the radio every day where people are picking apart your work, right?
Yeah, constantly. Yes.
Exactly. So it's a neat process, and it's pretty humbling.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about all the things you're involved in, because you do wear a lot of hats, and you have worn a lot of hats over the years. But let's go back to the beginning. Where do you come from, and how did you make it up here? Let's just start at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Minneapolis, in the heart of the city, right, just a couple blocks south of Lake Harriet, and that was my roots. But my real fishing roots, Kevin, took place right here in Bemidji, Minnesota, Cass Lake, Minnesota. My mom is a graduate, Cass Lake High School, and I've had family and aunts and uncles that lived here in Bemidji, and I was the youngest of five boys, and interestingly enough, my mom and dad got tired by the time the fifth kid comes around. That was me. So I got thrown on a bus, and I would get dropped off in Cass Lake, and I had an uncle who had a cabin on Wolf Lake, on Little Wolf, actually. And so I would spend a couple weeks of the summer with him, and we would fish every single morning over there on that whole Cass Lake chain of lakes there. And then I had another aunt and uncle that lived over here just off of Bemidji. I'm Birchmont Road, right across from the old Blue Ox Resort.
Oh, yes.
Anybody remembers the
yep.
Blue Ox Resort? And I used to... they had a deal with the resort there that I could walk across the street, and they'd grab a boat, and I could row out to the end of the pencil reeds there, I'd throw over an anchor and catch perch all day long. They also had a cabin on an island on Lake of the Woods. So between Lake of the Woods, Lake Bemidji, and Little Wolf, that's really where my passion for fishing was born, amongst those fisheries and right here. And that's what brought me back here as an adult, was all those memories of fishing and living here in this area.
One of the things I find really interesting over the number of resorters I've met over the years and fishing guides, certainly there are some that were born and raised in this neighborhood, but it's a lot of them that didn't get to experience it every day that really developed that passion and found their way north eventually.
But I think that's true in a lot of things that we do in life. I think that it's good to immerse yourself in it and do it, but sometimes if you get to do it too much or it's too easily accessible, you've got to crave it a little. And that's certainly what I did with fishing. I mean, I had between all those places, I probably was only up here a few weeks every summer with those uncles, but it felt like the entire summer And then I would go home and I would, my dad would get, you know, Outdoor Life magazines and any outdoor magazine I'd get my hands on in those days, because that was the only information sources really available. And I just devoured them. I would read them from cover to cover. I would rip out, you know, anything that was a free ad that I could send in to get something for free. I was doing that. I would go to the trade shows or the sports shows in those days and just come home with bags and bags and bags of literature and brochures and what have you. But that was my reading material for basically for the entire winter until I was able to go fishing again.
So did you at a young age know this is what I want to do, or were you considering other options growing up? And it's just, how did it all work out?
Well, I did. I actually knew that I wanted to figure out how to make a living fishing. I went to college, went to University of Minnesota Duluth, got through school, and went to work. And I had this plan that I was going to make a whole lot of money, and then I was going to retire and go fishing. But after a couple of years of working, I realized it was going to take too long, and I have never been that patient of a person. So I was going to short circuit this, and I ended up going fishing. Obviously, a lot sooner. It was. One of the things, Kevin, that really influenced my life was my dad passed away when I was in my early 20s, and he was always going to retire, and he was always going to retire. So I joke about the fact that I wanted to make a bunch of money and retire and go fishing, but the real lesson growing up was that life is short, mm-hmm. and you should do what you're passionate about and do what you love and let the rest fill in around it. And that was the lesson I took from my dad's passing. So that's what I did, is I just kind of said the heck with following, you know, the tried and true what you're supposed to do career. I'm going to go fishing and see if I can make this work for me. And subsequently, 30 plus years later, I'm still here.
Yes. And you came up north. I mean, there are plenty of places to go, but this was the place you wanted to be?
Well, I moved up to Lake of the Woods. I lived on Oak Island for a number of years.
So you started way up top.
Went all the way up there. Well, I found a resorter that gave me a shot.
Okay. Right?
He said, I'll hire you. You can work on my dock, and I'll throw you a couple guide trips. So I took that opportunity, and I moved up to Oak Island. I was there for a few years. My wife eventually, who was living in Minneapolis, we were boyfriend, girlfriend at that time, but she moved up and went to work for the resort, and then she liked it, got another offer over on Cabotogama, Voyageurs National Park. Subsequently, I moved over there, and imagine what girls will make you do, right?
Yeah.
So moved over there and guided both waters. I did Rainy, I did Cabotogama, I was doing Namekan, Lake of the Woods. I did that whole region for a lot of years. Eventually, you know, one thing led to another, got connected with Reed Sporting Goods in Walker, Minnesota, and Jeff Arnold, and had an opportunity to come down here and do a little bit more work closer aligned with the fishing industry through him, and eventually found myself down here.
So what did you do for Jeff?
I did a lot of sports show work for him, and then he knew that my wife and I had this passion of wanting to have our own resort facility. And this, in the early days, it was all about guiding and resorts and lodging and the early parts of my career, and he had this idea that we could take our resort idea and make it a reality. In Walker, Minnesota, and we attempted to come down here and do that. He had a house that he was going to let us use, and we were basically going to come up with this bed and breakfast concept to fully guide people staying in there. But unfortunately, it ended up inside the city limits, and the city wouldn't let us turn this into a commercial operation, and it was a residential home. So long story short, we bit off way more than we could chew and ended up buying the old Big Leech Resort out on Pine Point with the Arnolds, and turned it into Adventure North Resort. My wife and I worked at the resort there for a number of years before we eventually turned it on and went to the next stage of life, right? You don't know what's going to happen. You just kind of evolve and push your way through and come out the other end.
Okay, so... And eventually you got to the point where you're this multimedia television superstar.
Well, I don't know about that. you do what you can do to figure out a way to make a living. I've always been a big fan of fishing, and that's what I think that's – and I've always been very passionate about fishing, and I think that's what worked for me, especially early days of doing a lot of the TV work in the mid-90s, was that I was very passionate, and I think that passion showed through. Subsequently, it worked for me booking fishing trips, working as a guide at that time. I was also trying to show people off bodies of water and lakes, and got hired by different resorts to shoot segments for fishing. I got hired by Canadian Provinces to go up and shoot segments for fishing and make tourism videos. And then that led to how-to videos with fishing companies and tackle companies and rod companies and reel companies. And all, and just one thing kind of led to another, and you just kind of work your way through it. It was, but it all comes back to you got to. I've always loved to fish and everything around it. It's, and as long as I'm doing that, I'm a pretty happy guy.
Well, and you have certainly been doing a lot of that over the years, no question about it.
Well, thank you very much. It's certainly been a lot of fun, and I still got a lot to learn. Right? I mean, there's it never really ends, this whole process. The discovery part of fishing is what excites me most. It was. It's also what kind of pushed me from when I first started, you know, guiding and taking people fishing and getting to fish all the time was really exciting. But I also, I think I've enjoyed the business side of fishing even more so, which I didn't know that I would or could, but the whole experimentation end of it and trying to figure out how to get reactions out of fish when, by trying something different or new. And that's what fishing inside on the business side allows you to do, is to get out there and push the outer limits and, you know, push tackle and experimentation and try to get fish to respond to things is really, really intriguing.
Well, and you've done obviously you are an extrovert. And or you come off as an extrovert anyway, and you've done a great job, you know, being on the stage for big tournaments, things of that nature, and of course, like we mentioned, the TV and the YouTube work and things like that. Not everybody can do that.
Well, it comes from being the youngest of five boys, and if I wanted attention, I had to stand on the table and get it. So that part has worked well for me. So no, I don't mind making a little noise. I don't mind drawing attention, but it's also it really is me and my excitement and trying to share with everybody what I learned about fishing. And that's what I love most about being a tournament MC for the National Walleye Tour, is I get firsthand to interview what I believe are the most innovative and best walleye anglers in all of North America on the same stage, and get to pick their brains and find out what, where, how, and when they made adjustments to catch more fish than the other great anglers that are out there, and they're doing it in real time in a tournament situation. And that's what I love about tournament fishing, is it's real drama played out on a stage where these guys got to make a decision, and obviously the winner gets a big reward. But it also makes us all better fishermen by learning how they make decisions.
And one of the other cool things I imagine for you is you get to go to a lot of waters that you may not have stopped by otherwise and check them out at least once in your lifetime.
Well, you know, there's a lot of great fishing all across North America. There really is. And the fishing opportunities that we have are seemingly endless, and it's really fun to get to experience as many of them. It also, Kevin, really helps me appreciate what we have here, because there's nowhere we have the density of lakes that we have in this part of the world, nor do we have fish as willing to bite is throughout an entire season like we have here. There's so much, you know, everybody thinks about Lake Erie and how awesome it is, and geez, it'd be great to go there, and there's all these big fish. But my gosh, if you look at the migration patterns of these walleyes over an entire season, they're moving hundreds of miles up and down a shoreline. And if you want to stay on the bite there, you're going to have to travel quite a bit. And what do? We hop from one lake on one side of the road to another lake on the other side of the road. It's not that hard to keep up with the fish in this part of the world, and that's one of the things we really like about it.
You know, one of the other great things a lot of people seem to really like is just the variety. It's, you know, I mean, you're on Lake Erie. I know there's other fish in there, but it's pretty much about walleyes.
It is. It's a growing bass fishery. There's certainly some excellent musky fishing out there. And that's true for a lot of fisheries. But we are fishing. We are, we're all about fish here. There's no doubt about that.
And like you say, you can hop across the lake, not just to get on another lake, but, you know, to go bass fishing or pan fishing. And it's just a hop, you know, like you say, across the road maybe.
And I think that's what makes us all better anglers. I think that's why the core angler, especially in the Bemidji area here, is so strong and so good, is because they do multi-species fish, and they do jump from panfish to bass to walleye. And that's what makes anglers really strong anglers and good decision makers at the time and place. And I think you see that on the tournament trail. The anglers that are well versed in multiple species and in multiple bodies of water tend to roll with the punches when the bite gets hot and cold, and they can make decisions better. And that comes from a good base of information. I mean, you see the same thing take place in sports. If a kid grows up playing hockey and plays a lot of unstructured hockey and a lot of playtime hockey and works a lot on their skills growing up, when it comes to game time, as they get a little bit older, they tend to be better skaters, faster skaters, and they can adjust on the fly more because they're used to playing pond hockey out back.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how Fishing the Wild Side came about.
Fishing the Wild Side is pretty simple and straightforward. It was developed because we needed a platform to talk from. I had in the 90s, I'd started to do a lot of promotional work and product development with a few of the ice fishing companies, and was going to a lot of ice fishing tournaments, was going to a lot of sports shows, going to a lot of out of retail stores and doing a fair amount of education, and it became this on ice tour, which seemed to go along and was working real well, but at the same time needed to get it into open water. And I had connected at that time, I'd connected with a tournament angler named Tommy Scarless, who was originally from Iowa, and him and I kind of came up with a duo between tournament angler and guide. And we did an educational and promotional series, and we needed a name. And that we just came up with the name driving down the highway one day. It really meant absolutely. I think it was originally Wildside Diversified. I think that's what it was. But
I remember that actually.
But that meant absolutely nothing. So then we were like, well, we got to get fishing in there somewhere. So we came up with Fishing the Wildside. Then it was Fishing the Wildside on Ice. And then so that's what we named our magazines. That's what we named the television programs, because we had a couple of them over the years. And it just kind of rolled from there.
Yeah. And what's Tommy doing these days?
Tommy's still Tommy's an incredible tournament angler, one of the best, if not the best, walleye tournament angler ever. I mean, he's continuing to win. I think his last 2 years he's won the World Walleye Championships on the MWC side, still very competitive on the National Walleye Tour, always up there in the World Walleye rankings. But he's also now, you talk about pushing limits, he's also fishing a crappie tour all winter. So he's traveling across the southern U.S., become national crappie champion once, if not twice, in the last few years. I lose track of him. But he's a very accomplished a crappie tournament angler, and has innovated the industry, really, because he's brought trolling tactics to crappie tournament fishing, which used to be done solely with spider rod systems in the bows of boats. So I got a lot of he's that's what makes fishing, right?
Yeah.
You're taking one technique from one part of the world and you're bringing it somewhere else and showing how it can work, and obviously it's working well for him.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about Northland Tackle. You obviously have had a long relationship with Northland Tackle to the point now that you are actually on the staff.
Northland Fish and Tackle has been incredibly good to me. John and Dwayne Peterson are two of my very closest friends. And in fact, it was my very first relationship with a manufacturer was with John. And I had started as a fishing guide on Lake of the Woods. I sent John a letter and told him how much I liked his product, when really all I was after was a discount. But anyway, that's, nobody needs to know. But I told him how great the product was. I was using the product and I wanted to. So I shared some pictures with him, and he sent me a cap and a handful of jigs, and this was a lot of years ago. And eventually we got to meet and shared a lot of information. But they've been really good friends, and most specifically, great mentors in the industry, and have helped guide me through my entire career. If it wasn't for those two guys, I have no idea where I would have ended up, because they have. I consider myself incredibly lucky to have found them as friends and been blessed with some advice and direction from them.
Well, obviously, Northland Fishing Tackle has changed over the years, and John and Dwayne are more or less retired, not spending as much time there as they used to. But that spirit of innovation continues there.
Without a doubt, that's what it's a very committed group of anglers inside that that front office that help innovate and drive the industry, and that's what has always made Northland Northland, and it will continue that way for a lot of years to come. I mean, they're very where John did things with very much a shotgun approach, so to speak. So he was coming at you from a lot of different directions and a lot of new products and a lot of expansion. But the company was young and evolving and changing at that time, and the industry was much different than it was is today. Now you come into Northland mimics really the way the industry is, which is if you're going to come out with something, you're going to come out with one thing. It's got to have it's got to have a lot of muscle and meat behind it. You got to have some marketing support behind it, and there's not near as much shelf space available. And it's a lot more competitive for the little bit of shelf space that is out there. So they a much more targeted approach, but they're doing a very good job, and I'm really excited about some of the stuff that's coming. I mean, that's one of the neatest things I get to do with Northland Fishing Tackle is be a part of the design and innovation process with a lot of the new products. And I get to play with them. I get to have some ideas and some discussions and watch concepts become reality. And that, as a human being and as a fisherman, that's really, really fun. I mean, you talk about feeling like a kid every day. It's when you talk about toys and then watch toys get built, and then you get to go test toys and then decide if the toys are going to work. And it's, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Well, you've got the inside track. What do we need to be watching for this upcoming year?
This coming season, I'm really excited about. It's been overlooked and very simple, but in this part of the world, the fireball jigs have ruled the roost, right?
Yeah.
So we got the fireball and we got the stand-up fireball, and it's pretty much almost all that I fish with for the first 6-7 weeks of the walleye fishing season. Well, they've taken that, and now they've made a long shank fireball and a long shank stand-up fireball. So we're so used to the short shank hook of the fireball and the stand-up fireball, and the fact that it brings the head of the minnow closer to the heavy weight of the jig, and the minnow goes right out, or that the hook goes right out the skull for easy hookup. Now, in our world where we love to fish, especially with shiner minnows, and we want that hook way back at the dorsal fin of the minnow, you're able to do that with these long shank fireball jigs. So you can go in the mouth, out the gill, through the belly, out the back. So it's resolves a lot of the issues that we get, especially with shiner minnows or fishing with larger shiner minnows, where you bring up and you've got one that's bit in half, or you see the teeth marks of a fish where it grabbed a hold and maybe spit it out. Now you're going to have a hook inside that fish's mouth, and it's definitely going to put more hookups and give you more opportunity to get more fish to the boat. And that I am all in favor all the time.
Well, I tell you what, the fireball jig is just so good. I mean, it's just so basically good. I mean, it reminds me of Coke. They made Coke. They tried a new version of Coke. It didn't work. But then they made a diet version, and that worked. And they made a Coke Zero, and that worked. But it was still Coke. And it's up to me is what the fireball is. It works, and we do a little bit different for this, and we do a little bit different for that, but it's still the fireball jig.
Well, and those core colors of the fireball are still incredibly effective. I love all the UV additions and all these different tendencies that have come in terms of color and change, and a lot of that really is marketing preference, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Do I think that the fish care? Sometimes, yeah, but most of it, a lot of it is all about anglers and keeping up to date with local trends. I mean, why do you want a new shirt? You want a new shirt because it's a new shirt. Yeah. And I think that's all part of it. This, where the long shank really comes into play from an angling standpoint, is it's going to resolve a lot of those short strikes. And I think that if it's going to give you more hookups, that could become a mainstay. Now, I don't think it's going to take away the short shank fireball. And this was a big discussion that took place. I don't think it's going to take away from that, because there's certain things that short shank jig provides in terms of natural minnow action, where the long shank may take away a little bit of the natural flutter and flow. Like when you have a short shank jig and it only goes in and right out the top of that head, as that jig falls, you're going to get a little bit of movement from side to side from the middle and the tail of that minnow. Now you put a longer shank jig and go in the mouth, out the gill, through the belly and the back, you actually firm up the action of of that live bait a little bit, so it doesn't become quite as pliable. But at the same token, these, especially shiner minnows, are long enough, you're still going to get some tail action. But most importantly, when the fish grabs it, which a lot of our early season strikes are reaction strikes from snapping it, if they grab a hold of it, you're going to have a hook in their mouth for sure, which is going to put more fish in the boat.
Okay. So watch for that.
Yeah, don't, and load up.
Load up. Yeah.
Load up. You're going to want them.
All right. So I know you were in Costa Rica recently, so you're not well versed in this cold weather. But what have you heard on the ice fishing front?
Well, the ice fishing front right now is what it is, right? We've got some knee deep snow we got to get through, and that's okay. So it kind of limits your mobility a little bit, even with track machines and what all the things that we're lucky with these days. It limits your mobility, but the fish are starting to slow down. It's a midwinter funk time, like it always has. I mean, this is this for me. This middle of the winter, I do two things. I either really pick up my pace and run and gun during the prime times of the day because the bites are very, very narrow, or I will hunker down and wait out. With the deep snow, my first time out back now, I'm definitely hunkered down and picking the best spots that I think that their fish are going to show up at, and I'm trying to sit there like I am in a deer stand and wait for one to cross by. And if I only get a few bites a night, I'm okay with that. If I happen to hit it right and I get a lot of them, then I'm probably going to be back there tomorrow.
By and large, I've heard pretty good reports on leech for ice fishing this year.
It's been a tremendous year on leech. I think you're watching two things happen on leech. The biggest of which is more of leech lake is getting ice fished. I think that in our years past, I mean, everybody limited it to essentially, Walker Bay, or in particular Sandpoint, was receiving the vast majority, a little bit in Steamboat Bay, a little bit off of Pine Point. But the off of Pine Point, and especially off the South Shore, you're seeing people getting further and further out, fishing more and more places, and subsequently I think they're getting to pockets where people have not fished before or as often, and they're finding some very good success. We also know there's a lot of really big fish in leech. The DNR has told us that, and it is certainly the case when you go fishing out there. Your chances of catching a larger fish are pretty good out there right now, and that makes a lot of fun. I love fishing. I love catching panfish. But if I can go set the hook and it doesn't move much, and then you feel that little oh yeah, that's it.
All right, Chip Lear is going into the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame. Chip, you got your speech written yet?
I don't think there's a speech you can. You're really right. I just thank you. Let's go fishing.
Okay. When is the big event?
March 23rd at the Northwest Sports Show. It will be, there's a 5:00 in the afternoon. It's a Saturday. And it's myself, Matt Straw, and a few other anglers, I think, are scheduled to be inducted at that. The way the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame does it is they pick different locations across the country to do the inductions. And the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis has become kind of a mainstay. So they'll do it. Myself and Matt Straw, my good friend from In Fisherman, will be inducted at the same time.
Okay. I'm sure you're looking very forward to that.
Oh, it'll be fun. It's always fun to see all the guys. And of course, there's a lot of friends inside this industry, so that makes it all the more special.
Chip, well-deserved. I'm so glad you're going in. You really do deserve it, so congratulations.
Thank you, Kevin.